This is Infants on Thrones. Philosophies of men mingled with humor. We are the Quorum.
Hey, what's up, listeners? It's me, Tom. Hang on one second. Let me get some tunes started. Yeah, now we're talking. Just going through some old comments and messages that I haven't gotten around to reading quite yet. So, let's see. Hey, infants. So, yeah, Heather needs to be a permanent infant. Do we need to have a solemn assembly to vote her in? Who's the we there, pal? Okay, let's see. You guys need to find a way to keep Heather around. All right. More Heather, please. Let's see. Heather is the best. She is funny, clever, and doesn't take any shit from the boys. Alrighty. Alright, scrolling down. Let's see. Heather should be on every show. Okay. Heather, you are awesome. I honestly hated the idea of a female infant until you came along. Let's see. I adore Heather. I want to be more like her. Alrighty. Heather is a wonderful addition. Thanks, infants. You're welcome. Let's see. Heather's snark is awesome. Ordain her to become a bona fide infant. Yeah, well, stop bossing us around. Alright. Heather is awesome. I really like her John DeLynn impression. You know, that's where I've got to stop for a second. I actually really enjoyed that John DeLynn impression as well, so I also would like to give her props. Good job, Heather. Okay, sorry. Anyways, enough of that. Shall we get on to business? All right, so welcome to another episode of Infants on Thrones. My name's Tom, and today we're going to be doing Heather's PPI. And I'm joined with Randy, Bob, and Glenn. And we're also joined, of course, with the adored, the loved, the admired, the one, the only,
and his name is John Cena.
No, not John Cena. It's Heather. So let me give you a teaser. Some of the questions that may or may not get answered in this episode consist of: has Heather been made an infant officially? What was the real reason Heather ended up getting married? Would Heather vote for Barack Obama or Louis C.K.? What is the exact size of Heather's pant inseam? Does Heather have any tattoos? And of course we address, does Heather still attend church? So hang on to your earbuds, listeners. All these questions and much, much more will be answered in today's episode.
Are we recording yet? Are we live?
Welcome to another episode of...
I don't want to waste any golden nuggets, man.
A friend of mine, Bob, said that you're... He loves your Oaks, but every once in a while it slips into Jimmy Stewart. Has anybody ever told you that? I've never thought that before. But he's like, yeah, it's always like Oaks / Jimmy Stewart. I'm like, really?
Oh, now I'm going to be self-conscious. I'll have to think through that a little bit.
Bob, your voice really does sound different on that mic.
Does it?
I can definitely tell, yeah.
In a good way?
In a great way. I think it sounds really good.
Thank you.
I wanted to sound like more Heather-like, you know, in the way that she gets called out every episode for being the best. That's what I mean by sound more Heather-like.
Yeah, it's so really annoying.
God. I think it's working.
Well, okay, let's just start there, Heather. You must think you're the shit. So tell us how awesome you think you really are.
Well, the first panel that we did, the 14 Fundamentals, I set my goal really, really low and attainable. I just wanted to get through the whole thing without crying. So when I finished and didn't cry, and I like ran up the victory flag and ran upstairs and told my husband, I got Infants on Thrones out of my system. And then I hoped people wouldn't hate it, but I never expected for people to really, really appreciate me. And like the next day, as the comments were rolling in, I was just totally floored by it. I never occurred to me to expect that or anticipate that. So it was, yeah, I mean, it made my day, week, month, you name it. It was great.
What do you mean by
look at
crying?
How she deflected the question. Like, yeah. she lives in DC. She's learning how this whole art of deflection. It was yeah. Nicely done, Heather.
What did you
mean by crying? Like, it was emotional for you?
No, I mean, I'm a church crier, so it doesn't take much for me to, you know, shed a little tear.
Start feeling the
emotion.
But
I'm not sure that I have cried on any of the podcasts. So something to look forward to.
At one point, you said that you were. I think it was when Randy challenged you about your kids.
Oh, I was getting, yeah, my throat was getting tight on that. And that mini-sode, in the Christmas mini-sode, I was choking up a little here and there. But I haven't full blown cried yet, so doing pretty well.
The love for you, the ratio's at least 30-1. But there were like a couple of comments of people that didn't like you. I mean, how did you react to that? Because that's part of being, you know, an infant, is you put yourself out there, and some people are gonna shit on what you say. And maybe even your character. It's happened to me with.
sure. But don't you feel like if you don't, you haven't truly arrived until you get your own set of haters?
Okay, so it didn't. What you're saying is it didn't really bother you?
Oh, it bothered me. Well, it bothered me a little, but I just figured that it was probably girls who were jealous that they weren't me. Oh, who doesn't want to hang out with the men of Infants on Thrones?
Okay, so I actually have a question. Let's go back a little bit. How did you discover Infants, and about when did you start listening? How many episodes have you listened to? That kind of stuff.
Ooh, all right, so that was like 7 questions.
It's a John DeLynn compound question.
Uh-oh. No, you didn't give her any of the answers, though.
I didn't lead you to the answers, but I asked questions.
Yeah, so let's see. Glenn and I have a friend in common who told us about it, but we didn't listen to it. And then I listened to part of the John DeLynn interview, but I didn't listen to it then either. And then Jake and I have a friend in common who told us about it. So the first time I listened to Infants on Thrones was August 23rd of this year. And I listened to it for several weeks before I sent in my first outros. And how many episodes have I listened to? I don't know, a lot. Maybe 100 of the 250.
Wow. So how long did it take before you listened? Because you sort of mentioned it took some time.
Yeah, probably a year.
Okay. You just didn't really trust these friends.
I didn't listen to podcasts. It just was my thing.
Really? Not This American Life or Radiolab?
This American Life I listened to on the radio.
You live in Chicago?
No, I live in D.C. They play it here.
NPR, yeah.
Yeah. But no, okay. I didn't listen to podcasts. I produce a product that I didn't consume.
So you'd actually be a good guinea pig or test subject to convert people that don't listen to podcasts to podcasts. Would you say that you've converted to podcast listener now?
Oh, yeah. I love podcasts now. Sure. So
are we going to do, is someone going to record an intro to officially announce Heather as an
intro? This is how it's going to work, Randy. This is her final interview. If she does well,
this is a test.
Then we can give the stamp of approval. But if
meanwhile, you know, I have the password for the website.
Damn it! I shouldn't have given that out so easily.
Heather's like, hey, Bob.
If you give me a failing grade. You
can
still
have
really,
the veto power
really
like the president.
Credit.
Right, right, right.
I think that there's a lot of listeners that just already assume that she's an infant because she's been on so much lately.
Yeah, but they would be wrong, and they don't have any votes that actually matter.
They would be wrong. That wasn't really what I was saying, is that they were right.
Well, but I don't think that the normal listener really understands what it means to be an, you know, they think if you're on and you're on a couple of times and you're getting along with everybody, you're an infant.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty sophisticated
thing. So, Glenn,
no, but the difference tell me, what is between... It? Can I tell you what the difference is?
Yeah, that's what
between being an infant and being friend of infants? So the difference is 15 texts a day. That's the difference between being an infant and a friend of infants.
Wow, that's great.
And not only that, sometimes we'd kick you off because we wanted to talk after a podcast.
Yes, or I left because I knew you wanted to talk about me behind my back.
Yeah. Jeez.
That's fine.
So really the biggest part is being part of the Google group, because that's where we talk shit about people that we don't want to see the light of the day.
Oh, there's more than that, but yes.
Well, that's where we plan. I mean, that's where we brainstorm and plan and, yeah, everything. Yeah. So.
Okay, so were your expectations of becoming an infant met, Heather?
Oh, yeah. This is awesome. This is what every little girl dreams of. It's great.
But not any little boys, because, yeah, we're not taking boys' resumes anymore.
Yes, only
I remember I was confused by you at first. I was like, what, why do you, why do you care? I'm like, what? And then I realized maybe that was the wrong question. Who cares? We have somebody who's like really interested and wants to participate and produce stuff. That sounds great.
Yeah, and she's really talented.
Oh, so, thank you.
I mean, that
right, that too.
Yeah, I mean, the talk that she gave for conference, you know, next to mine, you know, hers was like spotlight and mine was like a flickering candle. And I was just like, damn, this girl gets it. But then you come on to the first podcast and confuse the hell out of me.
That was the best.
You're still active.
Yeah, you really messed with Randy.
Listen to conference still.
And I still am active. Yes, all of those things are still fairly true.
I mean, which active in quotes, whatever the hell that means.
Did you read the December
Ensign? I go to church.
Yeah, that's like not.
No, I haven't read it yet. I know. I mean,
read yet, but you will.
Conference talks. I read the conference talks. I don't read the Ensign.
Oh, okay. I thought that you, but you read all of the conference talks.
Yes, as a general rule, yes.
Are you a masochist? I mean, you know what good literature is. You
know
what good thinking is.
We're like rehashing the whole thing that happened before.
Yes,
Randy's
like covering old territory here.
Yeah. Do you still read the Book of Mormon with just like a glow?
No.
Wow, that's let's backtrack a little bit.
Back off, Randy.
Let's do a little backstory, Heather. So. Sure. Obviously, you had some, well, I don't even want to say crisis of faith or faith transition, because I don't even know. So, and you started to listen to infants back in August. So tell us a little bit about like your growing up and your act. Obviously, you were very into the church and all that stuff, because I've heard bits and pieces throughout the times you've been on the podcast, but walk us through that and then to where things started to crumble, where you became a fan / participant.
Okay.
That's when things started to crumble? When you started to crumble / you became a fan of Infants on Thrones, right?
Yeah.
And my life fell apart.
Yes.
Yeah.
Anybody else on this panel want to tell my life story? I don't want to tell.
There's only one part that I'm interested in talking about.
Oh, ooh. Yes, of course. All right. Does it happen in 1997?
Uh-huh. It did.
Oh, we're not talking about that. Okay.
Here she comes.
Oh, shut up.
Miss Beaver County.
Shut. I'm serious. Die in a fire.
What? Okay. Why are you so like hateful about
it's
having been, but you put it on your blog. You put it on the
know,
About Me thing. It's there.
You wrote an entire blog post that was too long for me to read.
Well, everything's too long for you to read, but that was to get out in front of the story.
So then I feel it's very important on Infants on Thrones that we get out in front of this story and control it.
Okay. Yes, it is true. It's all true. I was Miss Beaver County, 1997.
The one thing I didn't read much, but it was the bathing suit competition. You wore like a covering of your legs as a statement.
I did, and it's so lame. The whole thing is lame. I don't even want to talk about it. I don't want to waste any of my PPI talking about the Miss America pageant.
Miss America pageant, wow.
Oh, well, it's the umbrella pageant.
When did Miss Congeniality come out?
2001, I think.
Oh, okay. All right. So this is pre that.
So, Heather, what would you want to talk about if not your legs?
Well, how about her talk about her activity in the church and then her crisis?
My legs are 37-inch inseam. Very hard to find pants for before the internet. Okay. What do I want to say? So I grew up in Utah, in a tiny little town in southern Utah. It was all farmers and people who worked for Union Pacific Railroad, and my father worked for Union Pacific Railroad. The Mormon church was the only game in town. It was a little one-ward town, and my father was a Jack Mormon, and my mother was mostly active, not super committed, and from the time that I was born, I was really tall, and like I was a head taller than all the kids in my class in elementary school and really, really smart. So I always stood out. That was
were your
just
parents
a given.
How tall were your parents? Were they pretty tall? I mean, are my your siblings six, tall?
I'm the tallest of my siblings, taller than my brother. My dad's 6'3", my mom's 5'8", and I'm almost 6'3".
So you just got all the tall genes all in one roll of the dice.
Yep, that's right.
Where are you in your family?
I'm second of four. Three girls, one boy. And my brother, who is exactly 15 months younger than I, was my best friend growing up, among other best friends. But we're super, super duper close.
Still close?
No. When we got married, you know, new wives don't like you to be that close with any girl, even if it's your sister.
You have your family, he has his. Okay. Yeah.
Right. So I was pretty serious-minded when I was like 11, I read the Book of Mormon, and I started going to church. I'd been baptized at 8. I wasn't sure that I wanted to be baptized because I felt like I needed to have read the sacred book and had a testimony of the church to do that, but that wasn't... I mean, everyone got baptized.
You're so damn precocious.
I know. I'm sure I was annoying to a lot of people.
Yeah, that's pretty heady for an 8-year-old because I was like, everyone's going to come to see me, and I get to go swimming? That's great. Let's do this.
Yeah, and we get to go out to eat afterwards? We never went out to eat. That was huge.
And I'm going to swear right before and not swear after. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well, and then your siblings all try to get you to sin as fast as they can right after you get out of
the water. Oh, that's so cool. No, I definitely didn't get any of that. I was worried that it wasn't going to take because my dad smoked and drank coffee. And he was the one who was baptizing me. So I was very worried that
it
wasn't going to
count. Oh, yes. It was an invalid baptism. Oh, no.
Right. Yes. I was worried about that. And I was also just concerned that I was joining a religion without having read the Book of Mormon or received a testimony. I mean, even at 8, that definitely bothered me.
Then you had a conversion story that you brought up during Space Cowboy.
Yeah, that's right. So I read the Book of Mormon when I was 11, and I really loved it. And afterward, I was talking to my mom about it, and I had the burning in the bosom experience, and it was very powerful and exciting. So I started going to church, but having read the Book of Mormon on my own, I would pronounce all the names wrong, like Abinadi. That's how I would say it, because that's how I'd said it in my head.
Is for Abinadi?
Abinadi.
Right. Yeah, so I had to relearn a few things.
So you didn't know there was a pronunciation guide there at the end?
No, I hadn't figured that out. That didn't come till the end.
I guess
was
she wasn't as smart as we all thought she was.
No, you're all smarter than me because you found that. Well done. I'm impressed. So
what's the story with your dad being a Jack Mormon? I'm just curious. This podcast isn't about him, but just how was that growing up? Because Jack Mormons sort of blow my mind still. Because it's like, wait, you're part of this. You're part of us, but
yeah,
you still do everything wrong. But you're still here. Like, go away.
Well, and most of them still believe. Like,
I know, right?
If you really pin them down
on a fundamental level, yeah,
yeah.
Really weird.
I wonder about that. I don't know what my father's beliefs were, but it certainly made us different. It certainly was a problem growing up in an all-Mormon town where it's a theocracy and everything is about the church to be like the kid that smells like cigarette smoke.
Right. Oh, yeah, that would be... You can't get that off you.
Right.
I mean, you live in the house, and he smoked in the house, I'm guessing, right?
Yeah, well, he also worked for the railroad, so he was running trains to Las Vegas half of the time. So he was there in my house half of the time and gone half of the time. And when he would get home, we would run to our rooms and close the door and put towels around the bottom of it to try to not smell like cigarette smoke.
Yeah.
What does the church mean to your mom now?
My mom's active. She loves the church.
Okay.
It kind of started with me. I'm the first one who took the church very seriously. And then my older sister, my brother, it was a big rift between my brother and me because we used to watch pirated cable all the time and watch like Comedy Central and things that were inappropriate after I decided I was going to be fully Mormon and keep all of the standards in the for the Strength of Youth pamphlet. So, you know, it was really jarring for him. But then he just followed suit and got religion with me. And pretty soon after that, so did my mom.
Wait, so you gave up cable? When you got,
I did. I mean, protest. I wouldn't watch it because it was pirated.
How old were you? What age were we talking about?
12.
Okay.
I mean, we're still only 12.
let's move ahead a little bit. So did you serve a mission?
Wow.
That does move ahead.
unless there's other points.
Well, there's like puberty and stuff and like high school.
Great, Bob.
So I'm just saying there's a lot that happens in a teenage girl's life.
Hot flashes.
12 and 21.
So Heather, I'm actually kind of curious. You're like unusually tall. You're unusually smart. In a town like Minersville, is that what it's called?
That's right.
You had to have been like a kind of a freak.
Jeez, dude, is there a nice way you could frame that question?
I was a freak and geek, man.
Okay.
My question is, how long was the awkward phase before you blossomed from an awkward duckling to the swan that you became at Harvard?
Oh, it took the whole time. I never blossomed while I was in Utah. Yeah, did. I mean, I was very, there was no hiding that I was really, really smart. Like, that was a given. Like, my school had 5 teachers for 9 grades. It was K through 8. So all of the grades shared a teacher except the kindergarten grade. So when I went in with my 3rd and 4th grade teacher, I was in 3rd grade. He was trying to place me in math. So I was 7 years old because I'd already skipped a grade. And so his idea was, he like gave me the math textbook and said, all right, so just look over the chapter, take the test, we'll grade them, and we'll just go until you miss one. And that's where we'll stop and we'll start you for your math for the year. So we were there for like hours. It seemed like all day. But I learned like a year of math in an afternoon. It was just 100%, 100%, 100%. So finally I missed one, and I think it was because I called a rhombus a trapezoid. That's what I remember.
Oh, that's, wow.
Yeah.
Classic geometry error.
Classic, right. So I remember I finished and we were done, and he looked at me with this kind of like awe and fear in his eyes, like you've seen a unicorn or something, you know, like kind of surprised and kind of freaked out. And he said, like, if I weren't your teacher, I'd give you a hug. But it wasn't in a creepy way. It was just kind of like,
it was authentic.
Wow, you're really strange.
So you were like the Malcolm in the Middle kid.
I guess I haven't seen that, but
it was Malcolm.
Malcolm. Oh yeah, he's a math genius. Yeah.
Oh, math was never my strong suit.
Yeah, and Heisenberg was his dad.
Heisenberg was his dad.
Anyways,
continue.
So what was I going to say? Oh, so I remember thinking that, you know, maybe my mom is right. My mom had told me and I know moms all say this to everyone. She had told me for years that I was the smartest person she knew, even though I was a little kid. I was like, she'd been telling me that since I was like 4. And I always thought, well, that doesn't make any sense because the adults know so much more than I do. But that's when I remember, and I know memory is fallible, but that's when I remember thinking, maybe I can just learn faster than other people. Maybe I can just remember better, understand quicker than other people. It's different than knowing more.
So you were kind of driven to like play catch up, like, hey, I could be as smart as these grown-ups real quick.
Yeah, I mean, I was. Well, okay. All right, so if we're going to be honest here, so the couple
no,
of...
let's be dishonest.
So one of the main motivations in my becoming religious is that my father was a really... he's a violent alcoholic. And he was also a high priest after the order of Melchizedek. Mm. And my goal was to get as far away from him as possible. That was one goal. And the other goal was to find the magic button of obedience that would keep me safe.
Oh, God.
That's one of the reasons why I turned to religion. But also, I mean, in addition to that, I wanted to find the people who were like me. You know, I felt really different. But I had watched cable television, so I knew that they were out there somewhere. So I definitely wanted to go to a really great school.
Did you ever find that solace, that that environment that you were searching for within either Mormonism or not?
Yes. So I don't want to bash Mormonism. Like I got so much out of it. And especially when I, you know, I did get into Harvard and I did get to go, and it was terrific. I'm so glad that I had the church when I was in college, because, well, one of the great benefits of having a church is that it teaches you such self-discipline. And it's that kind of self-control that separates the men from the boys in college, I think. I mean, you can be as gifted as you want, but if you can't, if you don't have the self-control to sit down and do the work, other people are going to pass you up. And nobody could outwork me. And I, you know, I got that a lot from the Mormon church. And I also, you know, from the moment that I got there, I had a support group. I had friends. I had people I hung out with every single, you know, family home evening and church activity. And I never study on Sunday. So basically, I just hung out with Mormons for, you know, with friends for at least 24 hours in a week, which didn't happen for some of my roommates. And they, you know, struggled a lot more with it. It was really tough.
I don't think you can really say that the Mormonism stuff. I think it's your work ethic, something that's wired in you, because I went through all that Mormon stuff and I was one of the guys that did get passed up, because I didn't have that drive and determination in graduate school. Even though I was bright, I just couldn't sit down and make myself do stuff. So I think it's definitely, you should credit yourself more than just the church, is all I'm saying.
Well, that's independently verified that things like religion, which require you to keep certain rules, increase people's self-control and their self-mastery. Yeah. You may be outliers. I'm not saying that your experience is not true. I'm saying that on the whole, religion has a positive benefit on executive function and self-control.
Yeah, I tend to agree. Well, I'm just going to say my anecdote wasn't like Randy's or Glenn's, because I remember I was an active Mormon when getting my degrees, and I felt like extra special. Like I had, like my religion gave me power. Like I was projecting into the eternities, not so much just going through the motions for a system that rewards people who have these paper degrees, which is more the cynical way I look at it now, remembering back on it. But back then it was, I don't know, it seemed bigger and important and a huge part of my overall story for the eternities, and somehow that drove me in a way that, I don't know if that's what you're talking about, Heather. Maybe I didn't explain that very well, but
I'm not sure it was that. It was just I just loved being, I know everybody loved college, and I really, really loved it. I just loved being around the kind of people that I was around. It was horrible when I first got there because I was so far behind. I'm just this like farm girl from Southern Utah, and like I didn't know any math. I collected my A's in like my calculus class and Beaver High School, but I didn't know any math. Everyone knew so much more than I knew. People had taken 10 and 12 honors courses, and I had, or AP courses, and I had had one. And like I thought I had a big vocabulary. I couldn't understand what people were saying in some of the lectures. I would just like write down all these words that I didn't know and go look them up after the lectures. And it was terrifying because they like take your class of 1,600 people and they divide it into two sections because they couldn't fit everybody in an auditorium. And then they talk to you in the very first week and say, all right, so everybody who was valedictorian, or what is it called? Salutatorian? The second place? I don't remember what it was.
Yes.
They say anybody... Right. So everybody who is that in your high school, stand up. And over half the room stands up, right? And then they have you sit down and they say, just so you know, after the first semester, almost half of you will be in the bottom half of your class. So
that's how math works.
get used to not being the top of the class anymore. And so, right. And I had heard like passing grades at Harvard were 3 C's and a D. So if I could get that, I could stay in. But I'm super competitive, so there was no way I was really aiming for that. So, but it was like the first 6 months, I had to work so hard to draw even.
Yeah, you drew even, and then you accelerated. You had that second gear. But place like Harvard, you got like two. You can break them up into two groups, and this is oversimplified.
False dichotomy. Yeah.
Here's my false dichotomy. You have the legacy types. The ones who will never have to get a job in the cafeteria serving other, you know, fellow students. And then you have the people like you that, you know, kind of were diamonds in a rough that rose up out of their circumstances to get there. Was that a big part of the culture for you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was such a scholarship student. At first I turned Harvard down because my dad wasn't going to pay for it. And then the Harvard Alumni Association of Utah, thank you. Oh gosh, what are the names? John Kennedy and Randall Mackey. Thanks, guys. They bought me a computer so that I could go, because you had to have a personal computer and there was no way my family could afford it. And they talked my dad into it and me into it. And then my first week there, I auditioned for this choir, which I was clearly not qualified for because it required so much more sight reading than I could do. And I got in, and I, you know, took that as like God's way of granting me this blessing. But it did mean that I would have to sing on Sundays. But it was a paid choir, so I got paid for all the rehearsals and all of the performances. So I worked my way. I worked every semester that I was in college. But it was doing something that I loved and would have wanted to do as an extracurricular anyway. So it was fantastic. I had the greatest experience. But yeah, I mean, I was definitely the scholarship kid. Like, I mean, I taped over holes in the soles of my shoes. Like, I couldn't go to the temple trips because I couldn't pay for my meals.
Hmm. Wow.
How big of a presence was the Mormon church on campus? You had an institute? Because USC has an institute. That's pretty much?
We had institute classes that met in the non-denominational church. We certainly didn't have our own institute building. Let's see. In my class of 1,600, there were, I think, 10 of us who were active.
Did you feel like during your college experience that your faith in the church either stayed steady or got stronger? Where would you rank it?
Oh, good question.
It was always on two different paths because, you know, from seminary, I had certainly had issues rationally. Like going to seminary for the first time, 13 years old, and reading and really looking at the book of Abraham. Because we were studying Old Testament that year. And I had read all these murder mysteries by Elizabeth Peters, and I knew enough about Egyptology to know what the canopic jars were and to know what some of this stuff was.
What
and
about Hapax Legomena?
No. But I looked at it and thought, and I like said to the teacher, this is it. This is, we just have to show this to Egyptologists, and it will be an independent way to verify that Joseph Smith was a prophet, because he's got translations here of what these figures mean. This can be verified.
That's hilarious. You had your own Urim and Thummim of intelligence. Saw right through the bogus.
Well, actually information, like
yeah, right.
Yeah, but then the teacher said, "Oh, yeah, I think they've looked at it and they don't think it's right," and that was a big blow.
Wow.
That was a blow.
Yeah.
Ouch.
But I'd always been liberal, at least as far as feminism goes. So was my mother and my sisters. We definitely had major feminist tendencies. And the church's structure and policies and certainly its history of polygamy always struck me as terribly misogynist. But it was all on the shelf for that. And then it just got worse in college because I certainly believed in evolution. Like I said, I lost a boyfriend over it because he didn't want to marry anybody who didn't believe. Who believed in evolution. And I also, you know, was in the arts. I knew a lot of gay people. And what I'd been taught in seminary about them just wasn't true. That it was a choice that they made for attention. So all of those things are going in one direction. At the same time, my heart's... So that's my head, right? My heart's going in a different direction because I had so many just remarkable, terrific spiritual experiences and definitely felt like my life was blessed, and that I was blessed for my obedience, that I was blessed for my faith, that I was blessed for my participation in the Mormon church. I'm an artistic kind of sensitive type with a big warm heart who cries whenever anyone else cries. So I just had all these spiritual experiences, and I would tell myself, you know, my heart knows things that my head doesn't understand, and someday it will be explained to me.
Wow. So you had the separation of heart and head in a way, like you didn't. So it sounds like you didn't have the full on Mormon pride factor. Like I just remember thinking, like, the knowledge that I had as a Mormon was so far superior to, you know, any of this worldly knowledge. It's useful for the here and now, and it's good because that's how God operates, is with the laws of science and stuff. But like, I already have like a leg up because, you know, knowledge, Mormon doctrine. So you didn't have that, sounds like. You separated out spiritual from reality. That's great.
I don't know if that
I was like 28
so great.
Before that happened.
I don't know if that was so great, but I certainly learned a lot of things in college that make it difficult to believe.
So is it, is it fair to say no mission then?
Oh, no, I did go on a mission. Yeah,
you did after go on a mission. Okay.
Yeah, so I studied Russian literature as an undergrad, and then I put in my mission papers because I turned 21 before I graduated, and I went on a mission to Kiev, Ukraine, Russian-speaking.
So you you got your bachelor's but and then went on a mission?
That's right. Uh-huh.
Is it all one mission, Ukraine, or was like...
It was two missions at the time. It's three now.
Okay.
So describe your experience. Good? Regretful? Like, I don't know. How would you explain
it? It was so hard to go to the MTC. Oh, it's just awful because, you know, I lived on my own for 4 years. I had a degree and it felt like going back to summer camp with a bunch of kids. Right. It's like terrible. And with all of these rules, and I really felt like I was an adult and didn't need to be told when to wake up and when to read what. So I hated the MTC. And the worst was that I was in the Russian classes with people who didn't speak Russian. So, I mean, imagine going back to kindergarten and having someone teach you the alphabet, because that's what you have to do with a Cyrillic alphabet in Russian. So,
well, right, but
classes, people are learning the alphabet. It was so painful.
So you actually learned Russian before?
Oh, yes, I spoke Russian. Yeah.
That's
important. Was there, any...
I actually have to speak the language.
Was there any one in particular, like I'm thinking about my experience in the MTC, and yours must have been even worse, where there were these 19-year-old guys that were, they saw themselves as your superior?
Oh, for sure.
You know,
yeah,
like whoever your district leader was, or did you have any fun experiences that you can share with them like that?
No, I mean, I tried not to antagonize them. I kind of felt sorry for them. Like, we're all in the same boat. I felt
really?
Sorry for them.
Oh, yeah. I hated mine.
But my point, my mission in the MTC was to get a testimony of Joseph Smith, because I felt like I'd had wonderful experiences with the Book of Mormon, but I also felt like God loved me and he would have guided me through whatever book or culture or religion was available to me wherever I'd been born. I mean, it was an accident of birth that I'm born into a 500-person Mormon cow town in southern Utah. But had I been born in India, had I been born somewhere else, I felt like the Lord would have still spoken to me with or without the Book of Mormon.
So you felt like that was an accident that you were born where you were born?
Yes. I saw no reason to believe that it was a meritocracy of the preexistence, whether someone was born a Mormon or not.
Even though that's what's taught?
Yes. Yes.
Well, couldn't you just channel the Joseph Smith story itself and be like, oh, you know, old wine into new bottles, or how does it go? You know, there's a reason why it's a farm boy that has to become king of the world. It can't be somebody learned it.
I guess you could. Yeah, that never. So, but here was my point. I mean, I was trying to gain a testimony of this Joseph Smith, trying to force a spiritual experience is an exercise in frustration. You know, I fasted and prayed, and I at one point. Because they allowed me to stop taking language classes, they would just let me study in this other room. And I was like, I'm not leaving this room until I get a testimony of Joseph Smith. I'm just going to sit here and pray for hours, which I did for hours.
That's not a waste of time at all.
Yeah, Enos in a fucking cubicle. That's awesome.
And nothing happened.
So you left that experience dry, empty-handed, huh?
Yeah, I mean, at some point, my companion had to take me to dinner. Mm.
You need food, sister.
That had to be devastating.
It was disappointing. It surely was. And I had, I can't believe I'm going to share this. I had not sent in my acceptance letter for my mission, because you're supposed to send this letter to President Hinckley that says, I will do this and I'll keep all the rules and I'll testify and blah, blah, blah. And I, again, with my integrity that I didn't want to get baptized when I was 8 if I didn't believe in it, I didn't want to bear testimony of Joseph Smith unless I could do it with integrity.
Wow.
And so I hadn't sent that letter in, and I was like, am I really going to go to the mission field still not having sent that letter in, feeling like I can testify? So I still haven't sent that letter in.
You still have it. Still pending.
So why Joseph Smith? I mean, was that the only doctrinal hang-up?
It was the main one. I mean, it's the one that is so prominent in the first and second discussions that I'm going to be teaching over and over again. It was the main missing link from those.
You were fine with Jesus and stuff. Okay.
Yes, I was all fine. I was all on board with Jesus.
But you already knew his Abraham translation was bullshit. why did you think that
that was on the shelf. That was on the shelf.
Yeah, your shelf sounds really heavy at this point.
My shelf was very heavy, and I've actually reread some of my mission journals, and it's tough. I did not want to testify of things that I didn't believe in for any reason, and I didn't buy this whole idea that you should fake it till you make it or find your testimony in saying things that you don't believe. That sounds like an exercise in self-deception to me, and it did at the time.
Wow.
So I was very careful in the way that I worded things until the very end of my mission when I said, you know, I'm just going to take it on faith and do as I'm told. And I remember exactly who I first bore this like burning testimony that was not nuanced in any way to, and I felt terrible about it. I felt sick, and it was ineffective.
So positive experience overall or no?
I was going to say, how the hell did you get 18 months with this?
So I had wonderful experiences as well. There are a lot of things that I loved about my mission, and Randy has called it being burdened with empathy, and that's what it is. I mean, it's blessed and burdened with a lot of empathy so that I just suffered and bled for these people who, you know, I lived 50 lives of joy and sorrow for the people that I helped and the people that I was unable to help. And that was a great experience. That it was a great experience to care that much about people.
Well, Glenn's talked about that because I serve stateside in a bullshit mission. and Glenn,
I'm glad you recognize that.
I totally recognize that and bitter about it. But Glenn served an awesome mission and talked. He's talked a lot over the years about the cultural imperialism.
Mm-hmm.
So, do you have any stories about cultural imperialism that because? I mean, that was when you went on to Ukraine, that was a pretty new mission, right?
It was. It had been open, I believe, 7 years in most places, in the places that I had served. And that made it much easier because I had visa waited in Yorba Linda, California, among the evangelicals. Yep.
Richard Nixon.
And they, from their churches, had the anti-first discussion to teach you about Joseph Smith, which we never sat through. It was such a different experience to go to Ukraine where people have been under communist rule for such a long time that the whole idea of spirituality and a God and Jesus was foreign. I felt like I was giving them something that their lives didn't have. So I felt good about that, whether it was my brand of Christianity or not. The cultural imperialism was tough, and I really disliked my mission president because, I mean, you have to keep in mind that I am a Russophile. I absolutely love Russian culture, and I loved Ukrainian culture as well. I mean, this is the culture that produced incredible writers and musicians, and I absolutely love everything about the culture except the politics. They're always getting it wrong. But
since Lenin, right?
Long before that,
the Tsar. Yeah,
long and troubled history that area. But my mission president, he had very little respect for the people that he was teaching, and he wanted all of the missionaries to speak English to each other, which I suspected was because, yes.
That's bizarre. That's like the opposite of the church is true to me. That's weird.
I know. I think it was because he had struggled with the language so much. And so his justification was that all the members of the church should learn the language of the restoration, which is English.
Oh man.
Give me a break.
I give you no break. That was it.
It's awful.
Yeah.
Hey Heather, does this can you translate this? Pizdiets.
You're here. What?
No. Pizdiets.
D's nuts.
Okay. A Ukrainian, an insane Ukrainian woman that I know told me that's fuck you in Ukrainian.
Oh, I probably wouldn't know some of the
same. Oh, that's right. You wouldn't know the cuss words.
No, if you'd like to quote me a line of 19th century Russian poetry, I will translate it for you.
Damn it, I was waiting for to use that.
Or
all
like
night.
Church words. What did you think of the church words? Did you question any of the translations, you know, for like, I'm trying to think of a good one. Atonement. There's like four different ways to say it in, you know, most cultures, and you probably didn't like the one that the church chose. At least I didn't. Necessarily.
What was language were you speaking, Bob?
Bulgarian.
No, the atonement was okay, but some of the missionaries who had gone before had translated the saying, which is not from the Bible. I never said it would be easy. I only said it would be worth it and put a picture of Jesus on it. And they had made these posters. Two different waves of missionaries had tried to translate it. And the first one said, I never said it would be easy. I only said that it would cost you. in the second.
Whoops. Oh, that's beautiful. That's so
and, yeah. And the second one improved on it. It said, "I never said it would be easy. I only said how much it would cost."
That's not much better.
Wonderful. So were you kind of a golden missionary? Because you probably had language skills that, that really were obvious by comparison to the others.
Yes, for that reason, I think that I was trusted in...
Members love that, and so do mission presidents. Members loved it.
Well, mission presidents don't love it when...
yours doesn't, because he doesn't really value language as a skill.
Well, I was very fluent and very empathetic, and so the branch leaders and the members would very often turn to me as the authority when I had district leaders and zone leaders who were supposed to be the authority. Mm. So that was a problem. I was a woman. I didn't have the priesthood. Why is everyone turning to me and asking me what to ask God what he thinks?
Because you can communicate. You know exactly what they're saying. They probably are looking for nuance, not just like a canned line.
Yeah, what are these idiot elders saying, Sister Craw?
Wait, is Glenn here? I haven't heard him in so long. Glenn, are you there?
I'm here. I'm just stifling the urge to tell my counter stories to your stories because it's not about me.
Wow.
Come on,
I know.
Jump in. I want to hear counter stories.
Oh, yeah. it's just, you know, like the language
Tom's side.
Mistakes. Yeah. Tom doesn't want it. They don't want to hear that the savior was Scooey Nushi in Japanese. Scooey Nushi. It's just funny.
Sounds like Scooby-Doo. I like it.
Yeah, so Bob, that new mute button on your microphone.
Yep,
I gotta work at it. Yeah, okay, all right.
So you come back from Ukraine, and now you have the whole rest of your life ahead of you. You're like what, 20, almost 23?
Right.
What do you want to be when you grow up in your mind at that time? Like, where do you want your life to go?
Yet again, I got my head and my heart right. I like to compare it to Jane Austen's book, Sense and Sensibility, where I have my Eleanor character, who is very rational and who makes sure that we make, you know, good choices, and my Marianne character, who is super passionate and artistic and, you know, a little bit wild. And most of the time, I keep Eleanor in the driver's seat, because if Marianne were there, she'd have overturned the cart long ago.
Can you explain it in terms of Gwyneth Paltrow and Toni Collette?
Oh, fuck Gwyneth Paltrow.
It's Emma Thompson.
Movie.
Yeah, it's Emma Thompson. Kate Blanchett.
What is her name?
Kate Blanchett.
I refuse to be part of any conversation with Gwyneth Paltrow because of bald.
That was a different movie. It's the wrong one anyway. I just wanted to, you know.
Just fuck her.
Annoy Tom more by not using my mute button. And set Randy off for some reason.
Yeah, which really, I was gonna say.
It really sucks because...
sorry, man.
Yeah.
When we were watching The Christmas Story the other night, every time they would say, Randy, Krista would turn to me, my daughters would turn to me, they're like, you should use that for the podcast. You should use that for the podcast. I'm like, we say Randy enough with contempt on our own. Yeah. We don't need to take The Christmas Story.
Shut up, Randy.
All right, so go after the mission.
What did I want to be when I grew up? So I had previously wanted to be a physicist, but changed my mind. And then I thought about getting a PhD in Russian literature. I really seriously considered it and was, I don't know why I didn't do it. I probably should have. But then the Marianne part of me really wanted to pursue music, which I had done as an undergraduate as well. I actually, had cut a CD right before I left on my mission. And then the Eleanor part of me was like, no, let's do something really useful. Let's go to law school. So I worked for a bit. And what the heck is that, Glenn?
Somebody playing with their glass of alcohol?
Sorry, I forgot to mute it. It's butter curry.
Okay. So, yeah, so I went to
the Marianne part of me is eating butter curry. Sorry.
Lucky. Yeah, I hated law school. It was really boring, super stultifying. And the whole time I was like doing other music things on the side. I was taking voice lessons and singing with the Baroque ensemble at Stanford. And I was in a musical. I was in Fiddler on the Roof. And I was conducting the Institute Choir. And it was like, why am I spending all this time and getting a degree in something I don't even want to do? Why don't I just switch?
What drove you there in the first place? Was it just the competition, the challenge?
I thought that I would like it more than I did, and I certainly didn't like practicing law. I mean, I was also, it was very important to me after my mission to get married. So as much as I was terrified of it, I really wanted to get that out of the way.
And why is that?
I'm not going to say why.
It's why we all got married.
It's why we all got married.
We all wanted to have sex.
Because the law of chastity is a drag after a while.
Is that really the reason? Or are you just being sarcastic?
Tom's just surprised because you're a woman.
No, that was definitely the reason.
Oh, okay. I mean, no,
But for that, I mean, my parents' marriage was so bad. I think I probably, I was really terrified of getting married. I never really wanted to get married, but I'm not the kind of girl who's going to just be celibate for life and hope for the next life. It's right. Not going to happen. Mm. Where was I?
Law school.
Go ahead.
I'm just curious. Did becoming a physician or a psychologist or psychiatrist, any of that stuff ever enter your mind as possibilities? I'm just curious why you landed with law instead of medicine or psychology or some other PhD type program.
Well, it's definitely not going to do anything to do with medicine because I'm super queasy. There's no way I'm going to get through medical school of any kind. Yeah, that wasn't on my radar.
So you wouldn't saw a cadaver's head in half with a hacksaw like I did?
No way. Like when you talk about that makes me want to throw up.
Me too. I'm with you, Heather. Let's move on.
Ugh. Sorry.
No, it's not your fault. Brandy.
That was one of my favorite moments in dental school. It's the hacksaw on the head.
You're weird.
Oh, jeez. My brother, who was, my best buddy growing up, he's a surgeon, and he absolutely loves it because he always loved playing with power tools and building things, and now he just does that inside the human body.
Wow. Yeah. So your emotions were pulling you towards arts and music.
Yes. So I left law school. I did what every lawyer dreams. They left the practice of law and did something else. And I say that with great respect towards all lawyers, including my husband. And then I had to convince some conservatory to take me as a grad student without a bachelor's of music, which was a terrible feat. And I would not recommend it to anyone. It was so difficult. And then I had to start all over again, going to grad school and being so behind. I think that I was more behind in grad school than I was behind when I started Harvard. Wow. It was terrible.
That's impressive. And you cut your losses. Like, that's like,
I know, sunk costs.
Almost non-Mormon. I don't know. You recognized that you didn't want to just do law school and you dropped out and you were just willing to take that hit. That must have like been super painful.
It was horribly painful. It was difficult. I don't know whether it was the right decision. I don't believe there is a right decision. But yeah, it was really awful. But the thing is, if it had been free, if it had been free, of course I would have finished it. But it isn't free. It's like indentured servitude. Once you take on your law school debt, then you need to practice. And I really didn't want to practice. But yeah. Here's the awful thing is that I applied to all the top law schools except Yale because there weren't enough male single Mormons in New Haven, Connecticut to make it worth my going. But
oh my gosh.
Yeah, so that is so true. That is 100% the calculus. But
and you would have totally gotten a Yale.
But the Columbia gave me the most insane scholarship. It was full tuition plus housing plus a stipend, like a living stipend. I would have graduated with no law school debt. And I turned it down for this guy that I was dating in Stanford.
He must have the most gorgeous eyes. That's amazing.
Oh my gosh. It's so embarrassing to me now. But
he wasn't even Mormon, right?
In my defense, he was very, very tall. He was very tall.
If you catch my
Well, that changes everything. Yeah, right, then it was totally a good decision. Okay.
Oh, so embarrassing. Yeah, no, he was Mormon. I think he still is, yes.
Oh, he was?
But yeah, okay. But it didn't work out. But I did end up getting engaged in
law school. Was he the evolution guy, by the way?
No, he was at Harvard. Yeah, he was like junior year at Harvard. Anything else about my past boyfriends? I feel like I'm trying the listener's patience
much. Just to clarify,
how tall is your current husband?
Oh, don't ask that question.
He's not as tall as I am.
Okay.
And how many boyfriends? Just to clarify, I want to see how many hands do I need to count? Them?
And what was their average height of all your boyfriends combined?
I had several boyfriends, and some of them were taller than me. The end.
All right. Well, let's get to Kent. How did you meet Kent, and how did you guys get married?
In a temple.
So I met Kent at Harvard. Yes, we got married in the temple. My freshman year, 17 years old, he was 22, back from his mission, and he was in my audition quartet for the Harvard University Choir. I didn't know he was LDS. And then we met each other later at the first family home evening group. And he was super funny. Everybody adored him. And we became friends. We went on one date. He took me to the ballet. And then after that, it was like, oh, no, totally friend zone. We're going to be friends forever. And so we were. We were platonic, best, close friends for 8 years.
Oh, a real life when Harry met Sally.
That's right. And I used to say, I'm proof that you can be platonic friends. Like, look at Kent and me. Not
until you're not.
and remember, this is Mormon platonic, which means no heavy petting.
I mean, I will say that we were very affectionate. Like, we would always like cuddle, and I probably held hands and stuff. And this is like while we're dating other people who deeply resented our close relationship.
Wow.
But we were like best buddies. We knew each other's families. We, you know, spent holidays together and stuff. So at some point during this time, probably several years, probably 4 years, 4 years in, Kent had some kind of crush on me, or at least considered me his future wife.
You think?
So he, yeah.
Did you learn nothing from Harry Metzger?
I learned nothing. No, it was all. I never knew any of this until.
So
it was
all this one, cuddling.
So wait. So it was one sided. Like you didn't have the same.
It was totally one sided.
Okay.
No, but he said he was even praying about marrying this very serious girlfriend, probably his most serious. And his answer was, "Well, if you do that, then you'll never be able to marry Heather." So he broke it off.
Oh, this is so romantic. Mm. Look at that. Like more
romantic. except for the girl that he broke it off with.
Oh, she's fine.
You know.
Yeah. She found her fine. State president.
She married a really tall guy in Stanford.
Hey, there's one.
Oh, that would be funny.
Let's move on. So you're married in the temple. So walk us through your spiritual journey until you hit your, I guess, faith transition.
I'm confused though. Aren't you at Peabody?
Yes. So we got to Peabody. So I got married after law school and before Peabody.
Okay.
Peabody is the conservatory at Johns Hopkins in Baltimore, Maryland. So I don't know what happened to was happening to my faith at this time. Probably the same. It was just like the same until 2008, which is when Prop 8. Went down in California. Right. Before, no, that would have been 2008, right, that I had moved.
Can I ask a question before all that? How did you coordinate, as a good Mormon girl, like all of these scholarly activities, but being married and then like kids? And how did you reconcile and not just follow your husband wherever he's going? Or did you and it just worked out? Like, walk us through that.
Oh, so I never wanted to have kids. I never had a maternal instinct until I did.
Okay.
Which was fairly late, so I wasn't really thinking about that. We were married without children for about 5 years, and it was awesome. I highly recommend it. It was terrific. Everyone should try it. And my husband was supremely supportive of me. He's like the best cheerleader ever, and he was willing to do whatever and go wherever. So he found a job out here so that he could come with me to conservatory.
No, that's amazing. So you moved there because of you, not because of him. That's astonishing.
Yeah, I mean, he never thought that I was a lesser being or a second-class citizen. That's one of the reasons why I felt okay marrying the guy.
Minus 10
but
points.
It also helps that Kent was like extremely qualified and could pretty much get a job in any major city.
Yeah. Well,
that does help.
Well, I mean, just the fact that he was treating you like an equal. I mean, and
yeah,
obviously he sounds like a keeper. I'm not telling you anything you don't already know, but
yeah,
yeah. And if it had been any different, I would not have actually considered marrying him. That is true.
Awesome. So 2008 happens.
All right.
And then,
so
yeah,
this is getting boring. Let's rush forward here. So 2008 happens. I'm really upset about it because I have a lot of gay friends, and it is. For the first time, it makes no sense to me, and I cannot in good conscience support what the church is doing. For the first time, I really just say, you know what, this is wrong. And that was painful to go in and try to renew my recommend and feel like I was compelled to say, because the vote was coming up in D.C., and I live in a suburb of D.C., the vote was coming up about gay marriage, and I wanted to make it clear that I was not going to support any campaign against gay marriage with my time or my money or my voice, and if that was a problem, then you're going to have to, then don't give me a recommend, which is what I said to my bishop who gave me a recommend, and my stake president as well. But that was a big problem. And then a couple of years later, a big portion of my friends started going through faith crisis. And I felt like I was the one who was anchoring them all and trying to convince them all to stay and being the apologist for a long time. And then even as I was forced to face facts, as I read things and, you know, read books and understood that so much of what I had been taught was not true, I still felt like I was fighting the good fight from the inside, that the church was better for having me in it, that I was an influence for good, that
you wanted to be
that
a
my
grassroots
time, talents,
leader.
And energy, right, were best employed trying to influence those around me.
I consider that the liberal Mormon delusion.
Oh, and it was easy to have the liberal Mormon delusion because there's a wonderful group of liberal Mormons where I live.
Right, mm-hmm. You're outside the corridor. You're back east.
Yes, I mean, there's definitely a place for people like me to go to church and see a lot of people who are like-minded and hang out with them, you know?
Actual Mormon Democrats.
Oh, yes, yes. Definitely Mormon Democrats, but not just Democrats. They're all the embarrassed Republicans who call themselves libertarians, like my husband.
Okay. Oh, he's a libertarian. Okay.
Oh, that changes everything.
Yeah, he's lost a point in my...
just keep us lockstep with you. So you're going through all this, and then you're keeping everybody anchored, and then...
I've tried to pinpoint a date at which I felt like, you know what, this just isn't true, and I'm not sure when exactly that was, but I gave myself so much time, and I tried so hard. I mean, it was bloodying my knuckles, banging on the doors of heaven for at least 18 months, asking for an answer, and just... praying and fasting and reading the scriptures again and going to church and really paying attention and feeling like this week, give me something, some kind of answer, because I will do whatever you tell me, Lord. If it's true, then I'll dedicate my life to it. If it isn't true and something else is true, I will brook no opposition in changing my entire life to follow whatever is right.
Did you have deja vu? Because isn't that like the same story from the MTC?
Yes, except it lasts for 18 months instead of 3 hours.
Till dinner, yeah, okay.
Right. So that was really tough. And at some point I realized no answer is coming. And I felt like I had not certainty, because that's never going to happen, but actionable intelligence. That I had enough knowledge to understand what I can and can't force myself to believe. So then everything went better. I mean, as soon as that, well, no, that isn't true. So the big question that I had to answer was, is the church true or not? Because in my mind, the only rational reason, and I'm not trying to crap all over anybody, is good reasons for leaving the church. But in my mind, the only rational, self-interested reason to leave the church is that you know it isn't true. Because if you leave for any reason, this is the whole Jack Mormon thing again, if you leave for some reason but you know that it's true, then that is going against your best long-term interest. And I'm just analyzing it from a classic economics perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the first question, is it or isn't it true? And once I had answered that, the second question is, well, then how am I going to live? What do I believe in? If I don't believe in this, what do I believe in? Because I want to have integrity. I want to live according to my beliefs, and that requires having some kind of beliefs. And so when I finally took to the difficult and daunting task of figuring out what kind of life I want to lead and what my priorities and values are going to be, then everything got better. As soon as I had decided what kind of person I was, then, you know, I snapped back to my happiness set point, because, you know, people tend to be at a certain level of happiness regardless of tragedy or great fortune. The classic example is the studies in which people's happiness is tracked before and after they win the lottery and are paralyzed in terrible accidents. And it takes about a month, 1 month, for the lottery winners and the paraplegics to return to their happiness set point level, to exactly or approximately where they were.
Right. To reach equilibrium.
Equilibrium, right, to return to equilibrium. So my faith crisis definitely depressed me. But then once that was over, and once I decided how I'm going to live, and I don't mean to say that I have all the answers, but I have enough answers that I snapped right back to my happiness set point. And probably I would say I'm happier now because I channel a lot of the energy that I spent in trying to find the magic button of obedience. I channel that energy into evidence-based ways of improving one's well-being.
Hmm. How do they predict who's going to win the lottery? To be able to get the happiness results from them before?
No, they just track lottery winners.
How do they know the before or after?
They interview them.
But how do they know to interview them interview before they win the lottery?
I don't remember. But then isn't it biased if they say, well, before I was this amount of happy and now I'm this. I don't remember the methodology of it.
It's a soft science.
Sorry, I'll go back on mute.
It's the best we can do with that kind of stuff.
You were part of it, Randy?
But that's only
I'm
one of
talking about the human race, asshole.
Oh, okay. Well, then,
wow.
So I'm all part right. of that. Good. Thanks.
So, Heather,
for us.
I'm just wondering if this, as a liberal Mormon for so many years,
yes.
I'm wondering if an option that you haven't really mentioned was ever something viable to you. Is that the church doesn't necessarily have to be the one and only true church, you know, true, as it were. How about, is it possible that the church is good?
Yeah, absolutely. And to be clear, I still am an active member of the Mormon church. And I wouldn't be an active member if I didn't think there was good in it.
Yeah. But did you ever think of that as a long-term solution? I mean, your days seem kind of numbered.
Why would you say that? What if it's not?
Just from her minisode, because I listened to her minisode.
Okay.
I'm not utterly naive. I do know that people in my situation...
I don't mean to imply that you're utterly naive. I'm just saying, has it ever... Is the option of a long-term relationship with a church where your conclusion is it's not the one true church, but it's good, and so I'm going to stick with it. Was that ever...
Certainly it was certainly on the table, certainly considering it. And I fear that at some point in the trajectory that either I or the Mormon church will take a good long look at each other and decide, you know, this isn't going to work.
Yeah, I mean,
and that we're going to have to break up.
But Heather, you're still in a place where the good of the church outweighs the bad of the church.
I'm still in a place where I'm evaluating it on a day-to-day basis, and I have to say the policy change shifted the balance.
Right, and it's momentum, right?
You're wasting your time.
Well, I do wonder about that because it's very important to me that I live a useful life, and that I be a useful engine like Thomas the Tank Engine.
Love it.
No, it's important to me that my life has meaning and purpose. And
evaluate what they do in the temple then. Yeah.
What's that?
Sorry. Keep going.
No, I this is getting so awfully heavy. Usually I just thought this was going to be so much more fun than it is, and it's my fault for for being serious.
Well, you're so interesting. Stop it.
If I feel that I can do more good elsewhere, then I will go.
Well, it kind of lends to the question that at least I've been thinking when I found out that you were still active. Do you deal with any conflict? I mean, you say that internally and emotionally that once you kind of faced that question, you turned on the happiness bar. You became happy again. You started feeling like you were doing good, but you're still attending. Mm-hmm. And I can speak from my own experience that when I go. You know, sometimes, you know, it's water off a duck's back. It's no big deal. But sometimes there's either things that are said or interactions that happen or judgments that are placed on me or my family where I'm just like, what? And then all the conflict and anger and emotion arises again. Do you deal with any of that? Or are you still like water off a duck's back? How does that work?
I definitely had that during my faith crisis, and when I felt like I was fighting the good fight, then I would get very frustrated. I've given up on the good fight. I'm just trying to help other people and increase the amount of elevation they experience or the spirit that they experience. So now that I'm not trying to change hearts and minds, that I've just given up on that, then I don't worry. Nothing bothers me. I mean, it also helps me tremendously that I know I'm going to get a chance to say whatever the crazy thing is in my head on Infants on Thrones. There's a forum for it where I don't feel like I'm hurting people. Like, this is sort of related to my feeling about the temple. And somebody, a good friend, asked me, you know, well, how can you give up going to the temple? But to me, there are a couple of things. I mean, first of all, I never really liked the temple. I found it, I had a horrible experience with it the first time, and I always found it misogynistic and strange and just seemed very false to me and cuckoo. So I didn't have a lot of affection for the temple, and I think that if I had an enormous affection for the temple that so many people do, that I would feel differently about it. I don't mean to downplay that. But for me, to answer the questions, yeah, sure, I could go in and get a temple recommend. I could, you know, in some way redefine enough words that I could pass the belief questions. But for me, that would be the same kind of falsification of my self-presentation that the church, in the same way that the church falsifies its self-presentation to its members. And that bothers me. It bothers me. But more than that, I really respect a religion's right to reserve its most sacred ordinances for its true believers. And that's not me.
Right.
And I feel that way in church too. Like, people are going to church and going to Sunday school because they want their worldview validated and they want to feel good and be buoyed up to make it through the week. And if my comments there are going to take that away from them, well, unless I have something more to give, then I don't feel like stealing from them.
Oh my gosh, I
would rather come to Infants on Thrones, where the podcast is that Sunday school meeting for people who want to hear the things that they agree with, you know, and who are buoyed up by that. You know, I'll come and say it here. Why would I say it to a bunch of people who it's going to hurt?
Makes sense.
So here's where I'm struggling.
You don't have
a little
to agree with me.
No. It's not.
I don't think I'm right.
I don't think I understand it well enough to agree or not agree, Heather. I don't feel like I'm judging it because I don't quite understand it to even be able to judge it. But when you say that you're going to be doing like the
but you have your judgy voice on, Glenn. I can hear your judgment in your voice. This is your judgy Glenn voice.
This is perplexed Glenn. So the question is, what is the good that you do for people by staying in the church? And then what I've been thinking about the whole time since you've said that is, well, what about what it does to you? Like, does it do good to you? Or have you just totally shut that part off where that doesn't matter to you if it does good or not to you because you just want to do good for other people? And, like, what is that good?
Well, because I have followed the Mormon script and become, well, I can't say I'm totally a stay-at-home mother. I work part-time. But my world has gotten so Mormon. I mean, I live in a metropolitan suburb in a very diverse neighborhood, and I may as well be living in a 500-person cow town in southern Utah for how Mormon my world is.
Right.
My friends are Mormon. My book club, my gourmet club, my child's book club, all of our friends are Mormon. Well, essentially all of our friends are Mormon. So yeah, my world is very, very Mormon. Hmm. So the value that I get out of being Mormon is I don't have to go make new friends. There's an enormous inertia. It's just very easy to continue to have holidays with the same people that you've had holidays with for the past, 8 years, 9 years. So there's that. Yeah,
the good that you do for them, for that group that's at least that group that's your friends, is you don't rock the boat and you don't make it uncomfortable for them to be your friend.
No, I mean, I think I'm an excellent choir director, and I think that I'm a good friend.
Yeah. I think that's admirable. And I kind of speak my language where it comes to, you know, all my friends, my family, everybody's plugged in. So I hear you. So what is kind of a finality? Where would you categorize yourself on the belief spectrum today? I know it's, you're still evolving. We're all on journeys per se, except for Randy. He's already, you know, he's at the end game.
Yeah, but, shut the fuck up.
Just kidding, bro. Tom, before,
because that's a great, great final question, but I've been patiently waiting to try to ask something to Heather.
All right.
That's more related, but then, like, finish with that question, because that's the perfect finality question.
Okay.
I didn't get to explore mine as much as I wanted to.
Yeah, I know. Well, you're not as forceful as I am to have your voice heard.
I know.
And so... you know, you're not going to talk about Kant. Do you ever worry about... Okay, so my dad is awesome. He's sweet, he's wonderful, and he's a bigot. Yeah. And the church makes him a bigot. And I left... I stopped going to church in May of 2010 because my wife didn't want to go to church on Mother's Day. She's like, it's my day. We don't believe. We're not going. You can go. Church is at fucking 8, so you go bathe the kids.
Wow.
And I was like, okay, we're not going. And then in fall of that same year, Boyd K. Packer gave his talk on why would a loving Heavenly Father do that to anyone. I came to the position like, I cannot even be associated with this fucking church, because for the majority of the people in the church, it works. But it comes at the highest cost of the minority in this church. And I cannot even... I feel like I'm complicit in the harm that they do if I stay in the church and continue to go and make people think I'm okay with this shit. Okay? So I'm wondering if that ever comes to play in your mind where you feel like you're complicit into the unimaginable abuse that the church does to innocent people... Even if it's not a huge number compared to the amount of people that they, you know, give meaning to their lives.
Yeah. Yes. It bothers me. Sure.
Could you elaborate?
No. No, I know. I agree with you. Yeah. Yeah. It bothers me greatly.
Okay. And so does it play into your decision ultimately of whether or not you're going to stay?
Certainly. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I guess all I wanted to do was get in the soapbox.
Well, I enjoyed it.
but it does speak to the question that I had about, like, when does the bad outweigh the good, you know, and what is the good and what is the bad? But, you know, I'm going to have to get into that.
Yeah. I'm a real downer. Sorry.
No, not a bit. So, yeah, that bothers me. I'm more concerned about what my children are learning than I am about whether or not the world sees me as complicit in the harm that the church is doing.
Right.
Or even
your friends and your kids see you complicit in that. And
validating their bigotry. You're validating their bigotry by joining hands with them every Sunday.
I don't think that I am. Everybody knows. Everyone knows what kind of a character I am. I mean, I've been openly Democrat and Mormon for so many years. It's not like being a non-believer is not going to shock anyone. People know what my values are, and they've known for many years that I don't support bigotry.
Well, and Randy, isn't it this the same problem with any institutional association? I mean, we're all Americans. Well, I guess Hamer's a Canadian, but like, and I'm sure our government has done something that we don't want to be complicit with, or I don't know. I just feel like, to what degree can this be used against you for, you know, your whatever club you're a part of and something happened? I don't know. It's hard.
That's actually a completely valid point. Yeah. I got a fucking iPhone and some Chinese kid probably died making it.
Exactly.
So I'm totally a hypocrite.
No, well.
But no, I am. We're all hypocrites all the time.
I agree with you there. Yeah.
One of my favorite Daily Show clips was when Jon Stewart tried to show, you know, people who wouldn't eat at Chick-fil-A. He He's like, all right, let's see if you can even live your life, you know, being perfectly ideological, strict.
Having
ideologically strict.
Uh-huh.
You couldn't do shit in America.
Yes. Yes. No matter if you have any principles at all, you're not going to live a coherent life, or it is just impossible.
Yeah.
Right.
So, can I move forward?
Now you can ask a question after, because that I'm sorry, I had to get that off my chest.
No, what am I? I'm not going to be the one that's trying to
Randy,
strangle it.
You are better than us all for not being complicit in the church's bigotry.
Yeah, but
you're so principled. That's wonderful.
Shut up. Patronize me, bitch. And I call you bitch.
Oh, man.
Because you're an infant now.
Yeah.
Right?
Look at that. Okay. All right. Yes. So, Heather, as I was trying to say, as we move along this journey, where would you characterize yourself on the belief spectrum in relation to God, Jesus, the Mormon Church? How would you characterize yourself that way?
I have no positive belief in deity. I allow that I may not know everything, but I think the weight of the evidence would, not only the weight of the evidence now, but the trend of the evidence is showing that the most likely explanation is that it's neurons all the way down. So I lean materialist.
So even the was it the dial tone after death sort of thing?
Yes.
Wow.
No ghosts in the machine.
Mm-hmm. It's possible, and I will say that I pray whenever it strikes me, and whenever I want to, and I don't worry about it, and I don't beat myself up over that impulse.
Is that a conscious effort or just kind of habit for him?
No, it just happens. I mean, I used to pray all the time, like 30 times a day or something. So,
right.
So if I find myself launching into a prayer, I don't laugh at myself or twist my arm to stop or anything.
That's good.
I'm fine with it. Whatever.
Do you feel like you want to fight back against the tendency of moving further and further away from the church? I mean, I say that because most of us infants are more like toddlers now, and it's kind of fun for me to see you as an infant because you're so close to having left the church, or you're in the process of it, or you're still active, whatever you want to call it. But you know, eventually...
Is it adorable, Bob? Can you be a little more condescending? Is it adorable?
Did I say adorable yet? It is adorable. Aww.
Oh, you're like looking at her like, oh, I see you're taking your first step.
No.
And it's so cute.
I, on the contrary, I remember when I took whatever those first steps were, and they were not nearly as sophisticated or well thought through, or I don't know, I you're the one who's coming prepared to podcast. You actually research things. You do have this evidence-based approach that you're going with in life that, you know, I pretend to do as well, but I'm mostly lazy and I just rely on others. I read Wikipedia a lot, which isn't good. So all I'm saying is like, but I just love the fact that you're where you're at, because to me it's exciting and engaging in a way that, isn't the same for me anymore. I mean, I was just listening to the episode with Sage, and when he was doing the whole Santa Claus analogy, I was thinking to myself, yeah, could you imagine if somebody at my age still was as involved with like podcasting about their disbelief in Santa Claus, like, you know,
they hadn't gotten over it
20 years later. Yeah. I'm just wondering, you know, if there's a part of you that wants to stay close to Mormonism in a special way, or if you think the inevitable is going to... I don't know what my question is. I'm just rambling now.
I don't know what your question is either, but I have a great deal of affection for the people in Mormonism. And I don't know that I'm consciously trying to stay close or not. I'm trying one thing. That's to be happy and raise my kids well.
That's
and I feel like I'm doing that. I mean, the essence of me... The things that are most important to me, I didn't lose.
Yeah,
that's good.
That's really good.
You know who, because of all the infants, I mean, let's just throw John Hamer out the window because he's an anomaly.
And he's not here.
He's gay.
Not for the reason. No, don't say
that. And, no, I'm saying it because it's funny. And he also like figured this shit out when he was like 12 and it's like, hey, this is a Hapax legomena. To me, Heather reminds like it's the only infant that's like close to her. I mean, if we throw John Hamer out, is Glenn, And it's like the rest of us were, you know, pretty much, you know, party line Mormons. And Glenn wasn't maybe liberal, but Glenn was always outside the box. You know, he was always
Glenn was always Glenn.
Glenn was Glenn, yeah. I mean, he is singular.
And he's right here and doesn't really agree with what you're saying, but go ahead.
You wouldn't anyway. if you weren't Glenn, you wouldn't. I mean, yeah.
You don't think you were outside the box?
Anyway,
the point I'm making is that Heather was a lifelong liberal Mormon. Right. And you know, we've talked about this this before, like us guys who we guys who built our fortress out of like fragile shattering granite, when cannonballs would hit, it shattered us, man. When I got polyandry cannonball, boom, the whole thing came down.
Mm-hmm.
And but liberal Mormons have this special like this kind of clay on their fortress where cannonballs bounce off it. You know, they may knock some of it off. So with Heather, it was like this gradual thing. So when she finally made the commitment to leave, she was hitting the ground running anyway.
Have I made that commitment?
You're leaving.
Okay.
I'm just going to tell you, you're leaving. Yeah.
All right. I know. You see the future.
Yeah. I'm omniscient. Where the rest of us, it was like earth shattering, and we had to like get up and try to figure out how to walk again, and that's how I kind of see how Heather's faith transition is so different from most of us.
Well, I'm not sure that it is. I will say, having been always too tall, always too smart, always too liberal, you know, being a Democrat among Mormons, where they're not sure Mormons not sure they really want to claim you, and a Mormon among Christians, where the Christians aren't really sure they want to claim you, I'm very used to being a frustrating anomaly. I'm very used to being different. And, you know, I'm just so okay with it. Yes, there are times where it's been very, very lonely, but I like being me, you know? I like waking up in the morning and being me all day long.
That's actually really, really great.
I wonder what that's like.
If I'm hitting the ground running, it's because I know what's important to me, and I feel equal to the task of living that kind of life.
Hmm. Wow. Well, and you are.
So, I know we've been running long and that's pretty much over, but can I just throw some real quick peppered questions? You can either answer them or skip them.
Of course, yes, please.
Metallica or Nirvana?
Not that dick. But those are both two good bands. But,
yes, choose.
Cyndi Lauper.
Oh.
If you could have a phrase or a word tattooed, well, do you have tattoos?
No, I don't.
If you could get one tattoo that was a phrase or a word, what would it be?
I would never get a tattoo. What a stupid idea, Randy.
Shut the fuck up. You don't know my life. Don't judge
me. You don't know me.
No, I'm so afraid of needles. It's just never going to happen. If I were to get a temporary tattoo,
a permanent
that involved no pain, yeah. What would I get? So it would have to be three words: love and beauty. That's what I care about in this world.
Okay.
Love, being close to people, and caring for others. And I just love beautiful things.
Okay, that works. Favorite Infants episode that you've listened to?
Oh, there's so many. That's so rude. What a terrible, terrible, mean question.
That's the correct answer. Next question, Tom.
Is it your minisode?
No, I can't stand to listen to that.
She would have liked it better if she would have edited it.
I don't like to listen to myself. It's so, I mean, most people don't.
Yeah,
like,
join the club, yeah.
Themselves, right? Yeah.
What about 14 Fundamentals?
14 Fundamentals I enjoyed listening to. I was surprised that I didn't cringe as much as I thought I was going to. I think that's a very good episode. My favorite one to record was probably the Christmas Story one we did at John's initiation. And let's see, one of my favorites, man, I loved the first conference episode you guys did. I thought it was just insanely funny. I loved it so much. Especially Glenn's Packer imitation. I was like crying laughing over that. It was so good. Another one that I thought was very influential for me was the 50 Ways to Leave the Church, where people gave their reasons for their shelf breaking. Or I thought that was really well done and insightful. And Who Wrote the Book of Mormon? Just terrific stuff there. That panel discussion on happiness was great.
So if you could rename the podcast anything, what would you rename it?
Oh, I wouldn't rename it. I'm not here to class the place up. I'm not going to change anything.
Just the website. Yeah.
The name, Infants on Thrones, whatever, it's fine. Randy suggested Heather and the Infants. I wouldn't object to that.
Yeah, we're the back
like Hootie and the Blowfish.
Yeah.
Heather and the Infants, okay.
No, but I like it. Yeah, and I also just... I'm so glad that no one would ever consider changing the name Quorum, because that's what needs to happen. We don't need to rename things. We need to change the definitions of things. A quorum now includes a woman. Take that, LDS Church.
Yeah, so that's
right. Philosophies of Men means men and women. Just get used to it. It means both.
Yeah, okay. Fair enough. Most regretful thing you've ever done?
Oh, yeah, just off the cuff, right. You know.
Just pepper
off.
I never should have fucked that transvestite.
Randy, this is...
That's yours.
He's so eager, like, this. I'm going to make this my PPI.
Okay, I'm going to say...
Well, I haven't had one yet, man.
Okay, can I give you a PPI, Randy?
No.
Please.
Yes, she can. If she's made it through the interview, yes, she can. And I want to be a part of it.
All right, most regretful thing... Being Miss Beaver County, okay? I regret it.
Oh, there it is.
Yeah.
It comes around.
And that was in Provo County, actually, right? Where you were the Miss Beaver.
Provo County.
That was Beaver County, wasn't it?
No, I was Miss Beaver. I also, oh my gosh, Miss Beaver County is so embarrassing. I also did the Miss Utah State Fair pageant and the Miss Utah pageant. And I think I won an award in that one. I think I can't remember what it was.
Are you going to put your daughters through any beauty pageants?
No, absolutely not. For further information, see my blog. I'm okay. Not letting her be in pageants. All right.
Last one. Who is someone, and you can't use your husband or anyone in company, who's someone who you really, really admire?
I just don't admire anybody, I guess. Oh, no.
Are you
serious? No. Nobody's as cool as you.
No! Don't twist it, no. Who do I admire?
Like, if you could wake up and be anybody else besides yourself for a day, who would it be?
Or just have breakfast with them. Yeah. Jesus.
And then you can go back to being you.
Yeah, because that's how awesome.
No, so... I might have to change the question. Like, who's somebody that I really want to have breakfast with? Yeah. Louis C.K. for really? Sure. You know, possibly Jerry Seinfeld. I just want to I just want to spend time around people who make me laugh. That's what I love. I mean, Glenn he's asked me like 7 times, so why did you want to be involved in Infants on Thrones? But yeah. The real answer is so pedestrian. It just seemed like fun. You know, and I'm way into fun. It seemed like fun, and it is. And it seems like it would be really, really fun to sit down with Louis C.K. Or Tina Fey.
Not Barack Obama, not...
Sure, yeah, that would also... I would also invite him along. Yeah. But if I only get one, I'm picking someone who makes me laugh.
Wow, good answer. All right, I'm done. Anything else?
Louis C.K. is a great answer.
Wow. Sorry to try your patience.
Yeah, as soon as we stop recording, I've got some things I want to ask.
We're done recording, but I have to admit, not a single Heather tier. That's you put the challenge.
Oh, there were like 2 or 3.
Hello, this is Penelope from Manchester, England, and I'm recording this in a sexy British accent because I believe that as a woman, this is my best chance of getting on the podcast. You may comment on this episode on the website infantsonthrones.com. And if you've really enjoyed what you've heard, give the Quorum a 5-star rating and write a short review on iTunes. I did. And that's called Lying for the Infants. Now then, anyone for the closing prayer?
And this probably has a lot to do with the baggage of, like, the questions we got at Sunstone. Why don't you have a woman?
Oh, that didn't even come up. Look at us.
Yeah.
Oh, like, yeah.
I wanted
hit
to
record.
Explore.
We got to talk about this.
I was
really?
I was hoping to explore.
Yes.
We are not adding Heather because she's a woman at all. That is not even in the equation.
It's not in the equation.
Even unconsciously, Randy?
You can't say that.
Yeah,
I honestly believe that because
okay. Like, that we definitely want going in the episode.
We've had opportunities to add women, but like there's something about Heather where she won't
shut up.
Crush us.
She won't shut up. Who said that, Tom? Tom,
what a dick. She won't crush us with her disappointment at our foibles and our baggage.
Yeah, I kind of feel
I
like
was me
her in because she's so fucking smart and so talented.
But I would also say that there's probably other people that would fit in as well. That's all I'm saying.
Sure.
I don't know.
There's always it seems like, you know, we've added several people to Infants. We've only had one that's threatened to leave. So,
what are you talking
no,
about?
No, you Randy, we went
oh,
months
yeah,
and months.
Yeah, that's
months
right.
The,
that was
a shade joke.
That was a running joke by Glenn. I was never seriously going to leave.
I don't know.
Was it the best?
Yeah, are you sure about that? So, Heather, was this interview as good for you as it was for us?
Why are you guys always asking me that?
I was good, right?
Thank you for listening to Infants on Thrones.